Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, non-conformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, ghouls, goblins, near-dead, undead, vixens, vultures and vampires, the wickedly wonderful or the wonderful witches, welcome to this spectacularly haunted episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. Coming to you on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Public Radio, Castbox, Overcast, Pocket Cast, and iTunes. My name is Damien B. Donnelly, and I have the joy and spine-tingling pleasure of bringing you this very special episode to celebrate Halloween, Samhain, All Hallows' Eve, the Night of the Undead, Dia de los Muertos, or however you wish to call this pumpkin fest of a party. I could not be more excited than to introduce you tonight, tomorrow, or whenever it is you're tuning in to this podcast to 13 spectacular poets from around the world who are all sharing stories from the dark side, the other side, the backside of the sofa, and the far side of our fears. This is Eat the Storms, the Halloween special. Expect it to be extra bloody poetic. Now it's time to get on with the episode. So to start us off, before I introduce the first guest, a little poem from me. This is called Willful in the Wild. Willful in ways worrisome. Like in the wilderness weaned, he was born of the breeze and bound from baby to be breathless. And when they caught him, he said, "When I lay me down, let the ground make of me what it wants. Let the soil seek substance beneath the skin." Reckless in ruthless rebellion, like the river ravages roots, too timid to be touched, too tormented to be tamed. And when they chained him, he said, "When I lay me down, let the sun make of me what it wants. Let its rays find rest on my remains." But as they strung him up, he heard in the distance the feathers running restless. And as they pulled the rope, he knew in the mountains the vultures were hovering, eager at last to make a meal out of what was a beast of a man. My first guest on this special episode of Eat the Storms today is originally from the UK but currently lives in Indonesia. She joins us today with an eclectic range of interests, from the horrific to the whimsical. The author of poetry, flash fiction, short stories, and is currently working on her first novel, Wild Haven. I give you the bloody bright and ghoulishly brilliant agender writer, artist and performer that is Arden Hunter.
Hi everybody, this is Arden Hunter and I am super thrilled to be here today on the Eat the Storms Halloween Special Poetry Podcast. I have some mega creepy, scary poems for you. I hope you enjoy. The first one is called There Was a Young Serial Killer, and it was first published in Salt and Citrus this year, 1st of October 2021, in their Fear issue. So here we go. There Was a Young Serial Killer, by Arden Hunter. I followed you down the dark track, in the quiet and the pitch black, grabbed hold of your hair, then cut off your air and stabbed you right in the back. It was quiet out there in the trees, no watchers, no strife, no unease, just you on the ground giving out your last sound, your expression just starting to freeze. Your blood soaked my jeans and my hands, congealed in your hair in the strands. It tasted like peace, like some kind of release. It listened, as blood understands. I buried you, marked you with stones, so I can come back for your bones. I'll polish them fine, let them glow, let them shine. I'll lick them and stifle my moans. The rapture of knowing you're mine, that you're safe and dressed up in my shrine, will drown out the noise that tears up and destroys any spark in me of the divine. But soon enough I'll become bored. Your bones will be bound up and stored. I'll not stroke your skull that's all faded and dull, forget it was you I adored. Then I will be free to proceed, find a new love to hunt and to bleed. I'll save them from life with one move of my knife, for my endings are all that they need. Ooh. All right, hope you liked that. All right, let's move on to the next one that I have for you. It's from this same publication, Salt and Citrus's Fear issue, which came out this past October. And the next one is called The Sleeping Prince. When I was young and people died, outcries rose, defend the crown. People then too much relied on figureheads of fake renown. Later, as my lives went past, talk of destiny and fate. Should this lineage not last? Would we fall? Was it too late? Seventh me, the fair and wise, counselled with the common man. If one day you should despise, clones of kings, this holy clan, cast them out, destroy them all, raise this wretched DNA. But I caution you, recall, all will end on that red day. I am number 92, royal copy on my throne, subjects now dispersed and few, set to rule this world alone. Clocks tick on, it is my turn, my advisers pause to strike. Current body soon will burn, hail the royal look-alike. Creeping pulse, clammy skin, sleeps inside his seeding tank. Narcissus dreams on within, dipped a hand, admired and drank. Midnight now, I watch him sleep, in the glass and metal bed. If he knew, then he would weep, walk unliving with the dead. There will be no 93. Servants howl, claw at the door. Thus our line, it ends with me, with this poison I ensure. Never will we rise again. Science cannot mimic souls. Kings are finite, kings are men. Life and death, essential roles. Learn from me, if learn you can. Copied copies cannot thrive. You alone, be you, one man. One day dead, but now alive. Yeah, a bit of sci-fi horror weirdness for you there. Woo! Okay, I've got another one from the same publication, because, you know, they said send us spooky poems, and I did not disappoint. It's another rhyming metered poem, and this one is called At the End. I'm talking to the echo that you left inside my chest. It whispers when I'm sleeping. It won't give me any rest. It tells me run, keep running. Don't look back, keep going west. I hear your voice so often now, I fear I am possessed. I'm looking at the shadow that you left above my eyes. I speak to it in gestures, and I wait for its replies. I hide again in empty rooms, remember old goodbyes. I know the where, the how, the when, but I forget the whys. I'm fighting with the touch you left imprinted on my skin. I slap it, curse it, bite it, but it will not let me win. It batters me with memories, twists my face into a grin. It eats the rage and fear that tries to burn me from within. The world we knew is gone now, there is nothing to defend. No families to fortify, no harms and hurts to mend. I'm carrying you with me so that I can still pretend that though I fall or I survive, you'll be there at the end. Nothing like a little bit of post-apocalyptic dystopian horror. Woohoo! Okay, I've got one more for you. It's a little bit different. This one is not a rhyming and metered poem, and it's published in a different place. This was published in Pink Plastic House, a tiny journal for their Haunted Dollhouse season, which is actually going on right now for Halloween. This one came out on the 13th of October, 2021, and it is called Sleep Paralysis. The shining eyes encased with flies crack wrinkles in the crust. The fingers rub together, shick, shick, shick. It waits for you to blink, sings sandpaper symphonies with digits gray and gone. You can't see it. You try to whisper, your voice the wind in tombs. It's not there if you can't see it. You defy your eyes as proof. There is no mouth above your head. It hangs there watching, mute. It knows it's there, your parallel, no need for life's approval. You can't move, but it can wave as if caught in a current. Creaks of withered dry bones cradled in flaking flesh, leaves tangled in mats of hair rustle, a child's mobile gone wrong. The tips of hair caress your face like weeping willow fronds. The flies are restless, coming soon. They'll act as mouth and maw. Are you asleep? Is it asleep? Are you in your bed? Or are you hanging above this thing, inevitable, impending? Are you haunted or are you haunting? A need to know, it grows. Your heart stops pounding, your eyelids flutter. You both nod in tandem. Don't blink now, or there's no more here. Don't blink now, no. Don't blink. Ooh, I hope you were super creeped out. I mean that in the nicest possible way. Anyway, I have been Arden Hunter. You can come and find me on Twitter at Hunter Arden or on my website at ardenhunter.com. Thanks for having me.
For my next guest, we are heading over to Wales to a broadcast journalist and communications freelancer who just last month was a featured writer in the Silver Branch series from Black Bow Poetry, an unmissable collection of poetry and prose now available to read over at www.blackbowpoetry.com. Believe me, you do not want to miss this work, especially when you realise that this writer only started writing poetry a few years ago. With work now in The Tide Rises, The Tide Falls, Womwell Review, Spill Words, and of course Black Bow, I hand you over to the writer who's about to raise the hairs on the back of your neck. This is Polly Oliver.
I've never seen a ghost, but I'd like to, I think. I believe the main ingredient of a ghost story, certainly in the British tradition, is a certain poignancy and a sadness, both for lost people and lost time. The ghosts of children encapsulate that particularly, and this is what I tried to capture in the poem Lonely Lane, which I wrote some years ago. Lonely Lane. That day you strayed too far away from the thrum of humdrum adult conversation. Your parents' polite patter in the porch of grown-ups unknown to you, eight and uncaring, still above the need for nonsensical niceties. No offspring there to share the wild dark of your eyes and heart that's only felt by those still ringed by the magical newness of being, or those outside the grey box of orthodox adulthood, the crazy square pegs, distant gazers. The side lane was alluring, exotically porticoed with broken pallets and scuffed buddleia. A few tentative steps and a glance at the elders, enwrapped in the ebb and flow of grown-up code, and you slipped into sudden silence, tucked between fences. The grey line of sky bent with your overloud steps among dusty weeds and muffled scrape of faded plastic wrappers husking past as you slipped unwitting further into the waiting wormhole winding between the planks and bricks of urban blandness. On and on. The sky lid darkened a shade over the fence walls, higher now, marked with symbols. No time, though, to attend to the sudden shadow under your springing heartbeat, for ahead, at the bend, a long-limbed boy comes grinning, his neck oddly bent. Hello, I'm Alfie. Later, your freckled smile bedecked the front pages, and as her ancient hand clutched the days-old local echo shared by all residents, most now uncomprehending of the black and white rustler they used to shuffle on morning buses or curled with a cuppa under long-lost covers, she cried out, more like a croak from her creaking throat. She called, "Alfie, how could you? Oh, lonely boy." Two tears dropped side by side onto your face, already consigned by the reporter's neat lines, weighted by the right pathos for a lost child story, to the realm of the dead. He had been there so long on his own, I suppose. She turned to the nurse, capable, concerned. Agnes let herself be patted, pillows plumped round her, closed her eyes, and remembered her lively big brother, lost when he wandered alone down a lane. The setting of this next poem, a cemetery, is traditionally spooky, but I think the main fear a cemetery engenders is that of being forgotten. This is Cemetery in November. I saw an angel's face greened with tears, watched globes of mist lose form and drip from holly tips. The wind limped and keened between statues and trees where moss softens names of the no longer missed. Arms askew, weeping pines reached to shuttered skies. Onyx-eyed crows stood silent, scaled feet on lost leaves.
Another very welcomed returning guest on the podcast next, who inspired and encouraged me last year and this year to write over 300 poems, all triggered by her poetry prompts on Twitter as part of her wonderful Poet in Residence position at Poetry Ireland. This is the award-winning poet, songwriter and children's writer with three poetry collections, A Bone in My Throat and Strange Familiar from Doghouse, and the other now published by Daedalus Press. Her children's books, Thirsty Baby and The Magical, Mystical, Marvelous Coat, were published by Little Brown in the US. The recipient of the Patrick and Catherine Kavanagh Fellowship in 2018, joining me from Dublin here in Ireland, I give you the thrilling Catherine Anne Cullen.
Hello, my weird listeners and spellcasting sisters. This is Catherine Anne Cullen here, Poet in Residence at Poetry Ireland, with some eerie offerings for your Halloween delight. Thanks to Damien Donnelly for conjuring me up today. I'm going to start with the very first poem from my first collection of poems. A Bone in My Throat was the collection, and this is called Taboo. Don't unlock the door. Let anyone in anymore. Eat the ripe fruit. Open the box, let your foot touch the floor. Because you will let in the evil, let out the evil. See the bodies of those you understand. Taste hatred in a gleaming apple. Be older than death, alone in your own land. Next, I'm going to read Strange Familiar, which is the title poem of my second collection, and is a poem I wrote for my daughter, Stella. Not God nor devil brought you. I neither chose nor own you, but am bound to you by blood and wonder. You were the dark shape at my ankles, weaving between my feet, one minute clawing the air all arch and hiss, the next a soft curl against my breast. Time was they might have burnt both of us, me muttering snatches of rhyme, you with your constant self-commentary, your animal companions, your night terrors. Now you look crooked at me, your father's fire flickering your nostrils, and I understand that though he and I made ourselves whole together, you made no such contract. We're caught in that tit for tat. I too was the spit and image of my father, a strange familiar to my mother, whose eyes for me were all nonplus and puzzle. My apron string kitten, it seems I turned once in a circle and found you shape-shifted to this long-limbed branch-leaper, walking on air solid as earth, blending fire and water, always in your element. I turn again and catch you looking out of your Moorish grandmother's almond eyes, eyes cool and clear as hieroglyphs of eyes. Your skin, opaque as moonlight, betrays something of your astral travels. You are making yourself visible without a spirit guide, contained enough to conjure your own familiar. And next I'm going to read a poem that I wrote for some children in a library in Kildare a few years ago. They asked me to write a poem about October, and so here it is. Poem for October. October is a greedy month. Night gobbles at the edges of day. The forest floor breaks the leaves down to a dull mulch in the earth's mouth. The woods hide miser's hordes, and spectres door to door cross into the other world as if there were no tomorrow. October is a prickly time of beech burrs and chestnut spines, of sweaters that scratch and scarves that itch my faded summer skin. Every autumn I want to burrow down, muffle up against the chill, swaddle and hide in a thicker skin till spring lets the sunshine in. But today I saw chestnuts fall in the park. My daughter said they were prickly apples, whispering jokes and bursting with laughter, mahogany shining through their slit skirts. Ah, the chestnuts know how to come out in winter. They cast themselves into the unknown, leaping from trees onto crispy leaves, shedding their thick green dresses. While humans huddle, the chestnut is saying, "Look at me, polished for the autumn. Tie me to a string and I'll swing all round me. I am not afraid of any season. I contain a whole world. Next autumn, I'll be a green leaper, throwing off my thick skin and fighting my corner, shining a brown light into the winter, knowing I'm big as a tree inside." And the next poem is a memory of a wonderful uncle of mine, a great uncle. This is his story. The man who was not a baker. Great Uncle George worked in a bakery, but his wife's lips grew tight if we called him a baker. "George," she'd say, "is certainly not a baker. He is a confectioner." As if a baker was a drudge who churned out loaves while George was a milliner turning edible hats. Every Halloween, packed in its own hat box, he sent the tall fez of his confectioner's brack, studded with cherries and gems of citrus peel. Raisins polka-dotted the sides. The top was varnished teak. When my mother cut thick slices to place on her gold-rimmed plate, we'd scrutinize each piece for hidden treasure. Wrapped in small squares of greaseproof, there'd be a ring or two, a stick to beat us with, a pea for poverty. But we were filthy rich with brack like a jeweled crown, made by Great Uncle George, who was certainly not a baker. My The next poem is called Signs, and it's, as you will hear, somewhat inspired by the Hansel and Gretel story. Signs. When you said you were leaving me, I turned and looked back the road for signs I might have missed. I knew the breadcrumbs were long gone. In this city, the gulls don't wait for morsels to fall. They snatch the warm rolls from your hands. But the white pebbles I had dropped to find my way back to the house with the dove on the chimney, or to where I'd last felt safe, crossing paths with you, carrying armfuls of firewood, those pebbles had become invisible, blended with the grey stone of the road, covered with ash or clay from the boots of others setting out to seek their fortune. And when I turned back to you, I had grown old and no longer saw clearly, for what I thought was your hand reaching out to me was the dry, white bone of a bird. Thank you so much to Damien Donnelly, as usual, for having me along. I'm going to finish with this poem from my first collection. It's a sonnet called Door. Whatever you do, you must never open it. But in her heart it opens a thousand times, swings in on terror, the creak of hinges unhinging herself. A dark stair climbs twisting in her mind to where everything says no entry. At all her exits and entrances, this one door stands sentry, its threshold shifting under all her ways, as though it were made of fragrant applewood from the first tree. It smelt of myth and darkest dreams and secrets and cold blood. When she stands before it, confronting everything, the whole house trembles, opens as the door roars in. Thank you.
Next up on the show today, to run shivers down our spines, is the poet who usually puts joy in our beating hearts. A fellow hoglet of mine from the Hedgehog Poetry Press, who is currently working on a new chapbook of love poems called Eight Types of Love, due out in February 2022. But today, the celebrated author of Venus in Pink Marble, Circling the Sun and Memory Forest joins us to share tales from the spookier side of life. From Venus to Vixen, don't run, this is Gaynor Kane.
Happy Halloween, everyone. It's lovely to be back on Eat the Storms. Thanks, Demi. I'm going to read a scary prose poem called They Say. They say there are bad boys up there on the hill, up on the hill that looks down on the street. The big house with tall chimneys, smoking day and night. They say that bad boys break out of the big house in the cover of darkness. They escape from crying eyes, flee the prying eyes of white coats, climb over pointed bars of the fence with its barbed wire, tearing trousers, scratching legs. They say they use the steps, the shortcut between the street and main road. They use the concrete steps in the dark, steps that smell like the park toilets, green and slimy steps. They say that bad boys break in. They break into small houses on Granny Street, small houses with gardens of pink roses and stripy sun curtains made of deck chair fabric, protecting shiny varnished mahogany doors and polished brass letterboxes. Little houses in rows of five in Belfast brick with 3.5 windows. They say that bad boys climb. They climb the stairs with gloss painted edges, brass carpet rods, and Axminster carpet running up the middle. Bad boys quietly climb cushioned stairs, making soft creaks while they creep to the bedroom door. They say that bad boys sneak up to the bedroom door and put grubby fingers around the doorknob. Behind the door, you lie as straight and as stiff as a carpet rod, eyes closed tight, wide awake. They say that blood runs. They say blood runs down your legs, staining sheets. They say that bad boys stand still. They stand on street corners afterwards. They stand angry and smoking. They run.
Next up on the show today is another returning poet who was previously on the podcast sharing poems from his collection Death Magazine, published by Salt in 2019. He is also the author of Black Jam from Broken Sleep Books, and his new collection, of which he'll share some poems today, is called Vampires, published by Bad Bessie Press and now available to pre-order. I had the exquisite pleasure of hearing him read some poems from this collection dedicated to the memory of his aunt at the Cheltenham Poetry Festival recently, and knew he had to take part in this special episode. Long listed for the Polari Prize for Death magazine, he's been published in Poetry Wales, The Rialto, 14 Poems and Poetry in London, among others. Watch out for neck bites. This is Matthew Haig.
Hello, my name's Matthew Haig, and I'm going to read some poems from my new pamphlet, which is called Vampires, and it's published officially on November the 18th with Bad Bessie Press, but it's available to pre-order now from badbessie.com if you want to check that out. The first poem I'm going to read is suitably Halloween inspired. So when I was a child, my auntie Rachel was very into Halloween and used to dress me up quite often, either as a witch or a vampire, and take me out with my mum and my brother trick-or-treating. So this first poem is inspired by those memories, and it's called I Am Your Witch. Playing dress up, and you, a giant mouth, rosy globes of bone. In this bedroom universe, my head's blonde moon orbits the planet of you. Such forests of makeup we pushed through to find the witch within. You set obsidian lakes on my nails, chalked twilight across my cheeks. You never forget the bin bag's crinkle as it's taped around your body in lieu of a costume, the waxy green effulgence of fake fingers, full chest. You spun me around towards October burning, the night so buttered with amethyst. This boy, you took his mind, you let the gender-bending bats in, let the spider eyes in, sweeps of eyeliner, slashes between seductive worlds. I play your cassette tape that raises a light cage over us, that wards off memory loss, which is the true death. I was born raw as whale fat. Horror movies licked their bloodlight over me. Once, you stood in the kitchen, lopping a glistening pineapple down to gold hoop earrings. We could smear the word pineapple with your ashes, and it would mean something. Once, God was stuck to the stuccoed ceiling of that house like a white-gloved hand. A mouse pointer. Playing Nintendo, we shriek with laughter as we kick bombs back and forth, you shouting, I'm dead, so many times, as if rehearsing for the big day, as if tempting fate, the way a moth invites itself to your lips. The one thing I keep is the vial of nail polish. I'm thumbing the black crust off it when the call comes through, when Mum's howl stabs upwards from the hallway. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I meant only to talk about the time I went as a ghost into the dripping night. Your warmth followed me. Tarmac exhaled from fresh rain, dark as liver, your fingers at my back. I swear for a moment my trainers left the mirrored ground. Staying with the Halloween theme, when I was roughly 7 years old, Batman Returns had just come out in the cinema, and I desperately wanted to be Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman. And with that in mind, this is another Halloween type poem. I said, I want to go as Catwoman for Halloween. They told me I was a boy. Pick the penguin instead. If only we possessed better vocabularies as children, I would have said, I will inhabit this planet for a smudge, a rind, a wafer skin of time, and you're telling me I can't be a BDSM vixen with an opal face and legs for days? The next poem I'm going to read is not really Halloween related, but it's kind of between the veils, I guess, between the worlds. It's a dream that I had around about the time that my auntie died, and I think when you're going through grief, you do have a lot of strange, vivid dreams where they kind of come back to you, and or you're sort of losing touch again. It's a very strange time. So this poem is called Palmer Violets. You're inside the wedding cake, coffin of icing, violet frosted roses. Do you want me to hug you in heaven forever? I plunge a hand inside the mess of sponge to pull you out. Did you see that episode of Buffy where they resurrect her dead mum, but she's not quite the same? Your soft hand is like that. You don't speak. I had a dream filled with beautiful, spooky music. The sky was end of summer blue. I walked streets paved with vinyl and Smash Hits magazine looking for you. When I woke, there were no cake crumbs, and that music never existed. The final poem I'm going to read for you is a very short one inspired by the Mortal Kombat series of games. Very bloody, violent, over-the-top fighting games that we used to play. Me, my uncle, my brother, my auntie. At Christmas times when I was a kid. Probably shouldn't have been playing them, but anyway, this is my last poem. So thank you to Damien for having me read again. And this is called 16-Bit Music. Chartreuse wind chimes of Mega Drive, shifting to synthetic griddle, hellish red drills. I once ripped your spinal cord from your torso, and it was love. Thank you.
My next three guests are very special muses of mine who I met originally on WordPress, where all four of us have blogs. These three writing angels were my first connections with fellow writers, and it has been a joy to see them sparkle over the years. And today I am delighted that they are here together. First up, we're heading over to New Jersey in the United States for a writer whose Monday morning musings on her blog constantly entertained me during my Dutch and later Parisian office lunch breaks. She is an independent scholar with a PhD in American history whose most recent work focused on women, sexuality and sexual violence. Visit her blog and you will see how her poetry falls from the drawers of her inner filing cabinet. She writes in her kitchen with a laptop and coffee and cats nearby. But today, instead of strolling along the Delaware River, she is taking a stroll along the darker side of life. These are the magical and mystical musings of my Meryl D. Smith.
Hi, Damien. It's Meryl Smith. I'm waving to you from across the sea in New Jersey. I have two poems for you. The first one is called The Nightmare. The Nightmare by Meryl D. Smith. The boundaries between mist and light, time and dreams, seems porous, slight in memories, thoughts dim, but feelings brighten, not where or when, but why we're frightened in the night. Death comes close as senses heightened to scream, beware. Before you vanish from that liminal space where hours dash and you wear another's face, knowing you are you, but not, and you forgot to take a test, or you're lost, or haven't brought that thing, you know, or maybe not. But where do you go in this maze of a house? And who is he? Surely not your spouse. But, oh, what he's doing feels so good. And you think you shouldn't. You wouldn't. But you would. Until they stare, the people, they're monsters with giant teeth. And what is that behind the door, beneath the bed? Not grandmom, not husband or lover. Scary creatures, they grimace and hover. And you want to escape, or at least take cover. But you can't till you wake, relieved the nightmare's over. This next one was published in a book by Hedgehog, The House in the Forest, which was a little anthology of stories, scary stories for the season, for all based on A House in the Forest. For Luck by Meryl D. Smith. At the rowan tree, I put a berry in my pocket. For luck, I said, and laughed. Two friends, an impulsive decision, a mythical vision, before the small, glimmering spheres appeared, beckoning in a pulsing dance to follow. And we did, slipping through stands of centuries-old oaks, where with branches raised in supplication or command, to stop here in this strangely silent space. Before the house with ancient beams and weathered stone, bone white in tree-slivered silvered light, moss like a fringe around its window eyes watching our figures reflected in wavy glass, connected somehow to others from inside, gazing out. Quick, look away, I say. Don't let it know you've seen them. Too late, was there a cry? A baby, he said, a baby, I'm sure. Or was it a woman, someone in distress? And so he left on a quest to search, to save, always the hero while I stayed. I tried to stop him, or at least to wait. I did, then felt a small, cold hand take mine, and two eyes shine black or green, a color I've never before seen from a small, pale face floating in the darkness. Come with me, and I started to, but something took me from my trance, a burning in my pocket, perhaps. I screamed, maybe it's all blur, and I whirled, stumbling over massive rambling roots. I ran, leaving a stink of festering fright, though I heard the forest whisper taunt, leave him to his fate tonight. Now, in my dreams, I see the house, And there, my lost last friend, who with glowing eyes and rictus grin murmurs, "I can't wait to see you again." Thank you again, Damien. I don't know if you heard my cat meowing in the background, a little added atmosphere. I really appreciate this. Have a good time, everybody. Bye-bye.
If you were no stranger to Eat the Storms, this poetry podcast, then you will also be no stranger to my second WordPress muse and next devilishly divine guest. She has a love of Ireland, but lives in North Devon in England and admits that age has taught her that having fun is much more important than being cool. Her exceptional poetry has been featured in Black Bough Poetry, Hencroft Hub and Spelt Magazine, to name but a few, and she is often the host of Diverse Poets. Now, take a seat and let's shiver together in the chilling company of Sarah Connor.
Haunted by Sarah Connor. If there are ghosts, then I think they are the ghosts of children. They must be the ghosts of children. The sounds you hear are a slap dash of running feet, a shard of laughter, a moment of song. Children who sing, children who slide into small spaces, who creep through the dark and then emerge into sunlight. Children who dream of full-bellied sleep, children who can still dream. If there are ghosts, I am haunted by the ghosts of children, all the lost children snatched by the ocean, left behind in the deep dark of the world, the wraith children who faded away in silence. Only their breath. Crone by Sarah Connor. From here on in, I'm standing with the crones, the cold-eyed, clear-eyed women who stand in judgment. Yes, I'm saying no and stop. And that's enough. I'm sweeping out the old shit, the old cobwebbing mess of sweet and pretty and compliant. I have bled and fed and shed so many tears now. Now it's time to take a stand, to accept consequences. I'm calling wolf and raven. I'm calling up old blood, old wisdom. Wait and see. I'm offering the wintering power of waiting, holding on, tenacity. I'm seeking out the austere beauty of bone and rock, of leafless branch. I will not soothe you. It's time now to embrace the anger of old women, the fierce cold flame, the pointing finger. I can't be doing with it. Stop. I'm doing right, not doing nice. I'm holding firm. The wisdom of the crone lies in the soil, in time, in darkness. That's where the seeds are planted. The seeds that send out roots and tender shoots and grow to be great trees. Bury it deep.
My last, but certainly never least, WordPress muse today joins us for the first time, though I previously shared some of her poems on the show, from her home in rural southwest France. I seem to have moved into her shadows when I first slipped my toes onto the cobbles of Paris just as she stepped off them. An exceptional writer of poetry and prose would work in Hedgehog Row, Tuck Magazine, and Ink, Sweat and Tears. She is the author of two poetry collections, Thicker Than Water and Birds and Other Feathers, which I really must insist you head over to Amazon and buy, as they will not only enhance your bookshelf, but they will enhance your mind too. She is also the author of many novels, including the epic Pathfinder series, a trilogy of novels about apocalyptic time travel through wormholes. She was also the creator of the unforgettable Month with Yeats Poetry Challenge, with which all the muses here took part and gave up some stunning Yeatsian tributes. I give you the voice and talent of the terrifyingly terrific Jane Doherty.
Grieving. Bare as winter trees and raw, the light grey as a cold sea, blue as distant hills the waking, and the soft night recedes. I dreamed a ship sailing like a gull, soaring on still wings, and watched it settle on the fiery red line of sunset. This should have been the honeyed plain, but the gold was gone, roses fallen beneath the rain, and the land of forever disappeared in an ocean of mist. Silence. I called out to bring you back, my white-breasted gull, but only the rising moon replied, tossing her horns and strewed the empty waves with silver feathers. Eagle. She walked with the eagle, my gran, not the thin-lipped bishop with his pointing finger. She walked the reek alone, no ghost to take her arm, but the dark roiling presence of the mountain stone and the ocean waves that swelled in her heart with the voices of the loved and lost. Her sorrow is part of me still, though she flies now, eagle high. I was born with her tears in my blood, like rain in the wild Mayo sky. They will run in its tide till I die. The Road Between the Trees. We are all bound in the warm dark, all treading the path that winds between woodbine and briar in the warm dark, breathing the smell of the peasants, on our tongues the language of the dead, the unknown bones that sleep in the mud, though once they were air and rain and turf and corduroy. We are air and rain and bound in the warm dark, and our feet tread the turf we said we would never leave, and on our tongues the taste of the breath our mothers breathed. They reached out to us the bare branches, winter dark, and the turf was cold in the grate, though we swore we would never leave, smelling of air and rain and turf and corduroy. The way back called in a sweet, rough voice. But oh, the road there between the trees was dark. The Rose in the Night. The rose came in the night and sang of blackbirds and a bloody dawn, and waves that rose and drowned the sun, that swallowed sky and rained upon a land of sadness full of tears. Thousands more, too many times the tides have ebbed and flowed again, and still they come, and still they die. How many more before we're done? Through the mist a song is sung, a thrush weeps where the rose is hung. When I am old, when I am old, I am already grey, the silvered strands as rich and thick as black. This quiet landscape, rainy green, will stay, though threads of fading memory grow slack. When I am old and have no fire's glow to coax the blood to frozen fingertips, I'll think of those raw days of long ago and how you warmed the magic with your lips. When I am old and these hills are the past, our lives encompassed by some city cell, I will recall how we walked to the last the ways of love, strong as the ocean swell, and nothing in the din, the grey streets throng, will ever dim the sound of blackbird's song.
How could we possibly have a Halloween-themed episode without welcoming into our spooky cobwebbed mists the author of Burials, a gothic horror poetry collection that was published recently by Clash Books? Its creator is an American poet, fiction writer, and book reviewer. And when you hear that she is also the poetry editor of the wonderful Coffin Bell, which gave my short story Behind the Pains home last year, you will understand the depth she dives into the dark tales. This is the spine-tingling Jessica Drake Thomas.
My name is Jessica Drake Thomas. I am an American poet, fiction writer, and book reviewer. I am the author of Burials, a Gothic Horror Poetry Collection, published by Clash Books, and I'm a poetry editor at Coffin Bell Journal. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. The first few poems that I'm going to read are from Burials, which was published in October of 2020. The first poem is called The Housewoman. When the pain came, I folded into myself like a Peruvian mummy, my arms holding my folded knees to my breast. My toes became roots, digging down deep into the ground, my spine a curved staircase. The halls of my arms became gray, stiff as driftwood. My hair was a knotty curtain covering my face. In time, I grew hollow. I became a house. Like all houses, I was a shelter, inhabitable. My mouth became a door, a large round hello for anyone to walk in. And everyone did, floorboard slamming beneath dancing feet, echoes of early morning, late night conversations, sloppy with spilled drinks, messy with smoke and music that I hated. Soon they were gone. I was haunted. Anyone who's lonely contains ghosts, empty after. The world has been stained with love and full of voices. The ache returned. I searched and found. Once colorful wallpaper, faded yellow flowers, the drapes choked with dust, decaying carpets. Distilled light came in through my eyes, broken windows. The next poem is called Bella and the Witch Elm. It's based on the occurrences in Hagley Wood in 1943. Four boys found her on a Sunday morning playing King Arthur's court. Lancelot hit the tree with a stick sword. Her jaw fell out of a crack in the old elm tree, its trunk squat and ancient. Her weathered skull, a bird's nest still firmly tucked like a crown within her brunette hair, tumbled out next, clunking grimly on the ground beside the scattered bones of her left hand. Gawain screamed, and the king turned pale, while Lancelot and Percival turned and ran. The words, like wildfire, began to appear on the schoolyard's brick wall, and the dumpster behind the grocery store emblazoned across the hermit's house. He might have done it himself sometime in the night. The Witchbury Church's sign, and the cemetery's lone obelisk in white chalk. Who put Bella in the witch elm? Who put Bella in the witch tree? The bones and flesh of the tree have enveloped Bella, fingers closing in a fist. Bella, who put you here? Speak. Will you speak? Her jawbone detached, hanging, mouth a slacked-jawed scream. As her teeth fall out, the faded taffeta knotted behind her chin, the only bit left holding it in, lets go of its secret. In the gloom, a dry whisper, as green wick twigs sprout from her pug-like nose and weeds blossom from her eye socket. I don't want anyone to see me like this, she says. There's a nakedness, an honesty found only in death, that the living can't respect. I can't speak for myself, so they all speak of me, breath from their lungs, dust from the chalk. I can see it again, the cycle where people start to fail me. Then, silence, as woman becomes tree, tree becomes woman. Woman becomes skeleton, skeleton becomes bones, ponderous and alone. Until the police come and wrestle her from the grave to poke and pry apart what's left. Try to piece together a woman from a corpse that's already half dust. A few navy blue rags with the tags cut out, peach taffeta under things, battered shoes, a fake wedding ring, and silence. Who put Bella here? Rumors ebb and die. Bella sits in a box at the morgue, dreaming of the shelter of trees, and a winter morning when the stars faded. I remember, she says, to no one, for who listens to a pile of bones? I remember when I had two lips, a tongue, skin, breasts, thighs, to-do lists, long drives, wine, warm blankets. I too experienced hunger, desire. I had a voice. The next poem is called This Is How I Bury You. I make a wax version of you, carve the word you used against me in his soft flesh to make him become you. I rub your wounds with salt, whisper the right words with intention. In time, this will devour you. When you feel my fire, remember me smiling. This hex is a virus blooming, spreading its dark spore into your veins, lungs, life, luck, dragging you under where you belong. This will take everything, gnawing away my flesh until I am nothing but bone, completing the work that you began. I hold you over a flame. Your head curls inward, melting into your shoulders, into your middle, until you are nothing. I take what's left of you, small drop of wax, bury it in cool, dark earth by a stream so you can't find the way back. The final two poems that I'm going to read are from my current work in progress. This first poem is called For You. I opened my mouth to birth moths for you, wings on my lips for you, exhaled for you, dandelioned my desire for you. I hexed myself blue for you, I possessed my body for you, like a demon for you. I twisted and contorted myself for you, consumed my own flesh for you. I vomited God for you, immured myself for you, in a basement floor for you, enshrined my corpse for you, like a jeweled saint for you, boiled my bones clean for you, choked dust for you, walked the poison path in pursuit of you, too many times for you. When you're not honest or true, despite all I've done, I do not exist for you. The final poem that I'll read is called Marigolds and Death's Head Moth. In this scene, I am the one holding the knife to her back. Ahead of me, our feet crunching in the gravel, she walks into the tunnel, into darkness. It swallows her whole. Asylum is a word that waits like a talisman under my tongue, a death's head moth that will spread her wings open wide when I release her, bare her second face to the sun, feel the warmth. Pollen floats upward, covering her skin with gold. If I stand on the tracks at midnight or high noon, if I do not move or blink, maybe she will reappear from the hell I sent her to. I will draw three black crosses on the crypt for her, drop marigolds beneath our name. Send me your blessings, sleeping one. Open your eyes, break me open, claw your way out from my back. I scream as she tears open my skin to breathe, rattling like a snake's warning. Happy Halloween, everyone.
Next up on the show today, I am delighted to welcome back another returning guest. This time from County Down in Northern Ireland. The author of 9 exceptional poetry collections, including Snakeskin Stilettos, Blood Horses, Carnivorous, and most recently The Bone House, published this year from the Dira Press. Today, offering us 2 poems on this night before Samhain, this is the devilishly incomparable Moira Donaldson.
Hi, my name is Moira Donaldson, and I'm going to read a couple of short poems suitable for the season. This first one is called Family Picnic. I think a late summer night would be best, under a harvest moon and afterglow of sun, the last real heat of the year. A woolen rug for us to sit on, and there will be tea, of course, and sandwiches, thin slices of salted tomato, sliced pan, cold chicken and new potatoes. When I call them, they will come, the hungry ones, brushing off the soil, straightening their grave clothes. They won't speak. This is the opposite of speech. I'll watch them fill their mouths with food. There will be home-baked buns with raisins in, raspberries, rhubarb tart, a jug of fresh cream. They will pack their bellies with what I have provided and sigh with satisfaction, sated at last. And when dawn is turning the sky pink with promise, they will go back to where they came from, lie down and stay there. That poem is based around the concept of hungry ghosts, those ghosts that have not been satisfied. This second poem is called Samhain. And as you know, this is the time of the year when the veil between the worlds is at its thinnest and the dead can come back to visit. Samhain. Even before dusk had fully fallen, the dogs began to arrive, eager to be called again by their names. They crowded round us, wanting what we had for them, bed, bone, love. The cats were later to appear, stalking in as if they'd no real need. They'd long shrugged off what we had called them, reverted to their own wild language. But still, they deigned to allow us their weight in our laps and their purring warmth. When the moon had fully risen, the horses came galloping, their hooves unshod, their breath pluming the air. They had forgiven us everything. Thank you.
For our next guest today on this spooky episode on the eve of All Hallows, we are heading over to sunny California in the United States for a poet whose debut collection of poems, Night Blooming Curious, will be with us on the 17th of December from Alien Buddha Press. With work already published in Hobart Dark Journal, The Wild Word and One Art Poetry Journal, she is a Best of the Net nominated writer and a reader for Sledgehammer Lit. Ready to put the hatchet into our Saturday night, this is Melody Wang.
Hi everyone, this is Melody Wang. Thanks so much, Damien, for letting me be a part of this special spooky Eat the Storms podcast episode. Tonight I will be reading 5 short pieces. The first piece is titled Fragments. In the center realm, my awareness grows, unbeknownst to him. I am no longer the doe-eyed child claimed, bound by naivete. He slithers forth now, the attempts to parade his glossy new image, as futile as the rebranding of the Cecil, an ornate and stately synagogue of sorrow. Darkening corridors leading to nowhere harbor secrets we've buried alongside our dead. Where are they now? A forgotten foretelling paces warily in an impenetrable glass cage. Under a quaint blood moon, he dresses his story again in off-white, flimsy shrouds, Only the filth remains. The next piece is titled All the Spells You've Harbored. Traversing the uncanny valley evokes a sense of wrong geometry, having never been fully accustomed to the delirium of the shadow world. Her neighbor refuses to cut those hedges blocking drivers' views, so the silent city grotesquely smiles, eager to gorge on bloated first fruits of the living before year's end. Mother's fig tree is barren this year, full diaphanous leaves tauntingly upturned to receive the blessing, yet unwilling to reciprocate the sacrifice. Both of these pieces were published by The Chamber Magazine. This next piece is titled, You Were Not Prepared. You were not prepared for the quiet return, an alabaster hand on the red curtain, reaching gnarled fingers for buried answers in rat-infested tunnels that still bloomed with mildew. In the distance, you sense the forested fog creeping in. Your footsteps crunch on gravel distracts you from the faint scent of gardenias as ghosts ignite and part ways once more. Turn around, and you'll see them standing in windless trees, solemn eyes following those last bits of stagnant energy, heavy in their intended snare. Turning, always turning, your stomach lurches at the growing stench of fear, an unholy penetration of the woods that reveals itself to be the very thing you thought you had escaped. This piece was published by Not Deer Magazine. The next piece is titled Victorian House. Several unforgiving encounters later, an insistent hand on the small of my back edges me toward the solemn house of my nightmares. Curiously drawn forth, I peer into the gloom of a yellowed parlor cradling the last remnants of the story they tried to silence. You descended the grinning stairway, succumbed to the flames, and that was the end. And yet, the wood remembers, as it always has. That piece was published by Crow and Cross Keys. My final piece is titled Belonging. Magnolia Street saw the horror of a decade. Smoke snaking up the Victorian, a life snuffed inside the back house. Just a recluse, they spewed, salty scorn that seeped into the louvered wood. Still, you hover near its shingled roof and spires, ivy muscling itself into the balcony's worn railings, so eager to escape the cruelty of the outside world, to embrace the dingy walls that held the gravitas of home, a sacred resting place to birth the only monsters that held you in their grasp. You watch bystanders hurry past with wild, unseeing eyes. They shudder to feel your faint aura brushing just one side of their bodies as the fading scent of old roses perfumes the portal that spans between you and those that effortlessly belong to a kinder world that, try as you might, somehow still eludes you. And that piece was published by Not Deer Magazine. Thanks so much, Damien. Take care, everyone.
I am so happy to welcome my next guest to Eat the Storms today. Joining us for the first time from Canada, this is the author of the visual and poetic collection Eden, just published by Floodlight Editions, a stunning collection that just arrived here in Lusk the other week. A Pushcart nominee and a multiple grant recipient, he's been published in many journals including Scissors and Spackle, Anthropocene, Fevers of the Mind and Black Bough Poetry, to name but a few. Today I am delighted to be able to hand you over to the writer, editor, visual artist, performer and publisher of Iceflow Press, who will be reading a poem inspired by one of my favourite novels. This is the Dark Lord himself, Robert Fried Kenter.
Hello everybody, this is Robert Fried Kenter, coming to you all the way from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, for this special Halloween edition of Damien Donnelly's phenomenal Eat the Storms podcast. I thank you so much for being invited, and thank you, Damien, and you are an extraordinary poet. Damien and I share a deep interest in the work of Bram Stoker and his classic Dracula, which was actually written and researched in and around the Dublin area. So tonight I'm going to read two erasure poems. One is based on Dracula, and the other is an erasure poem from the novella Heart of Darkness, which is another haunting, spectral piece of seminal fiction. I wrote the Dracula erasure in London, and it came out of a very foggy morning walk through Finsbury Park and then down along Seven Sisters Road. It was the spark for my making a piece from a page of Bram Stoker's haunting, disturbing novel. It's out of my book, which just came out recently, called Eden. It's a book of poems and visual pieces, collages and fragments. It was published in Toronto by Floodlight Editions, and this is Dracula Erasure. In the dark, all black, God's silver face, circle at all, vampire germs, empty coffin, huge flushes, crazy pudding. I kept 6 toys. Bones and sticking pins, crying, lots. I kept 6 toys. I kept the 6th. Sick Kid presents to sleep. I can't. Somebody better soon. Breath. And for my second piece, this is Marlowe. You cannot see the visual elements, but I hope that some sort of the vibration of it permeates through. Thank you. Document. Secrets. Well, I'm not going to. Uneasy. Ceremonies. Something ominous. Some conspiracy, I don't know. Outer room, 2 women knitted black wool, walking back and forth, slippers propped on foot warmer, cat starched white spectacles, swift and indifferent, foolish and cheery. She threw unconcerned wisdom. I am eerie, fateful, uncanny. The horror. Foolish faces with old eyes. Not many. Oh, looked, saw again, halfway. Visit the doctor. A formality. Propped. Swift and indifferent, foolish and cheery. She threw unconcerned wisdom. Uncanny. 2 Titi, Eam, the horror. Walking back, secrets. Well, I'm not going old. Outer room, darkness, knitting, introducing. Yes, forth, two women, knitted, black wool. Thank you very much. So lovely to be with you tonight, and happy Halloween to everybody. Thank you.
My final guest on today's special show has had poems published in anthologies by Beautiful Dragons Press and Indigo Dreams. Her first solo collection is called Ghost Walk and was published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press, which makes her a hoglet just like me. The collection combines her love of poetry and those shivers you experience when reading a good old-fashioned ghost story. A frequent contributor to Open Mic Nights and a finalist in the 2020 Right Here, Right Now Playwriting Festival for her black comedy Delira, I am delighted to hand you over to the frightfully wonderful Sarah Ragg.
I've written a collection of poems about ghosts, which are based on the old-fashioned Victorian kind of ghost story, which sends a shiver down your spine, but isn't too horrific. And I got my collection published last year by Hedgehog Press, and it's called Ghost Walk. The Ghost Walk. He holds his audience enthralled with tales of ghostly horror. The murdered monk. The plague child, the lost centurion separated from his legion. His words bring the spirits to life as he guides his group around the dark town's ancient buildings. His audience wants to be entertained on this chill night. They don't mind that his stories aren't real. A small round of applause, muted through woolen gloves, ends the final story. Who was the medieval nun? They ask. So convincing, so authentic. She stood behind you all the time, shaking her head at your stories. Must be a hologram. Electronic trickery. The group dispersed, happy with their entertainment, now seeking warmth and libation. But the storyteller stays rooted to the spot, ashen-faced and shaking. Protecting the refuge. The murdered wife screams. Her cries, which did not rouse her neighbours in life, but amplified by decades of pain, protect the women now seeking refuge in her old home. Drunk and raging, red face, fists beating on the door, the man stops mid-threat. Eyes widening, heart thumping, sweat turning cold on his skin, he suddenly feels the fear he normally inflicts. In his stumbling retreat, he cannot shake the cacophony from his mind. Louder than the angry jeers from the women at the upstairs window, more piercing than the wails of the children within, more frightening than his mother's bruised tears, it forces him back down the path and into the pinching handcuffs of grim-faced police. Later, the women toast the murdered wife, all silently grateful that, for today, they did not join her. Mouse Stick. After complimenting her customer's lovely home, she takes a lipstick from her samples box. This season's colour, she explains, twisting the tube to reveal a dark plum purple hue. She places it on the coffee table, afraid to look in case it appears again, but eyes drawn all the same. And there it is. Curled around the cosmetic, a small white mouse writhes in pain. Dark bubbles foam from its mouth, but his blood is not red, rather a dark plum purple hue. The customer picks up the mouse stick, eagerly lifting it to her pouting kiss, then smears her lips with its ruthless froth. Waiting for the last bus. Arms tensed, keys clutched between her fingers, she swung round to confront the no one that was there, just the breathing. Alone in the dark, she normally feared the living, but this was different. This was other. She knew she was being watched, but only from the corner of her eye. Her terror grew the longer the delay. No phone signal, no people, just flickering streetlights. She was more scared to walk than stay, even to the next stop. She must not miss that last bus home. Eventually it appeared from the dark, friendly headlights seeking her out. She almost wept with relief as she flagged it down. An old-style bus, but a welcome sight. The driver smiled as he waved her through to the empty seats, where she slumped down gratefully. As the bus disappeared into the night, another came into view. Modern, brightly lit, half full. It passed the stop without slowing, because there was no one waiting. The Committee. The meeting that commenced in 1973 continues without resolution. Everything is discussed, nothing agreed. The coffee is cold, the biscuits eaten, the agenda barely half done. Grey-skinned and hollow-eyed, the departed colleagues jab their not their fingers. Acrimonious outrage prevails, though why they are so incensed they can no longer say. With each vigorous shake of the head, they lose a little more of themselves. Their essence coils like smoke towards the broken window and escapes the disused building. Eventually, the only one left will be the sleeping minuter, who ceased caring long before the meeting even began. The astronaut. For hundreds of years, he has patrolled his lonely asteroid, travelling further into the stars than mankind ever dreamt. There are no days, no nights, just an ever-changing sky to chart the time. Sporadically, he returns to the site of his crash. Numbed by time, the scattered debris has lost its power over him. When he looks at his body, preserved as new in the vacuum of space, it is out of curiosity rather than the taunting agony that first haunted him. Sometimes he even lies within his unchanging self, trying to remember what it was like to be alive. And my final poem, Scargill Wreath. Hidden by the hung low haze that blankets trees in the dampening dusk, an ill-defined shade challenges the traveller to stand and deliver. But the dog walker in the twilight woods takes no heed, doesn't even pause, just carries on walking by the light of his phone. With increasing spleen, the felon fires. The musket that caused such fear when the hanged highwayman lived discharges its lead. Harmless, it doesn't even puncture the mist. The walker shivers and quickens his pace, but the dog stands firm, barking furiously at the unseen shadows under the gallows oak. Thank you.
Okay, we are now coming down to the last 10 minutes of today's show, and because it's a special episode for Halloween, and because it's, well, my podcast, I've decided, instead of leaving you with a poem, to leave you with a short story. This short story was published originally by The Fable Online and is called The Blind Assassin. I hope it leaves you bloody chilled. I don't remember what happened before. No clue as to who I was, what I was, but afterwards. Everything that happened afterwards is a completely different story. Because when you open your eyes after death, you discover a whole other way of living. Tick tock, tick tock. It's mostly darkness now. She left me no eyes to escape the blindness, but I can see when I want, when the need fills me. I see shape and sound and smell, these are my senses. She left me those. Guilt, regret, remorse, those weaknesses have no part in what I've become. I'm no longer accountable to the standards men hold as law. I am beyond law. And now, as I'm technically dead, I'm beyond man. Tick tock. Tick tock. I've made you better than before. You were a drunk, a drug addict with no direction. No one gave a shit for you. You would have died one day. I just gave that day a name. You should be grateful. I've given you something greater than life. Indestructible, eternal death among the living. She declared that day. The first day of my everlasting existence as I realized the horror of what she'd done. I wasn't human anymore. This was true. I would be unbeatable. Also true. But she hadn't given me eternal death. It was eternal damnation. I recognized her voice from somewhere before death. A soundbite on TV, ranting about experimentation, radiation, creation, bringing heaven to earth. I'll build a world that will never need creation again. All will be eternal, she bragged. I remember that. I'll always remember that. She won't. Not anymore. Tick tock. Tick tock. When I first awoke to her recreation, I felt no pain at all. That came later. When I came to understand what she'd made of me, she was my Frankenstein. She'd remolded me from her miscreant mind. Sight, you'll see much better, she whispered to my naked form. Strapped to the gurney, as forceps wrenched my eyes from their sockets. The tongue just teases you a taste, she insisted. This'll teach you to taste from within. And she snipped the tongue from my mouth with a blade, severing it from service with a single slice. Afterwards, she stitched it to the back of my neck to remind me of all that was now behind me. I was not a body of blood anymore. My veins had been drained, dried out like torn twine that tore through my flesh from the inside out. My innards had been expunged. Discarded floor father for vermin to devour, and they did, nightly as I lay there, monster metamorphosizing. In my chest, empty of all organs except my heart, a machine of amorality maintained me. A pumping, self-sustainable liquid through the little that remained of me. Limbs that had been ravaged, hands severed and replaced with scythe, legs hacked at the knees, mounted on metal spikes, while my manhood was slit, sliced and stuffed with the slithering tongue of a serpent still hissing. I was a despicable demon. An envoy of evil, a punishment for a world that had dismissed her dreams of total autonomy as nothing more than inhuman, unjustifiable, godless existence. I was her retribution. She believed I'd bring them all down for her, but she misjudged who was master. A monster knows no master. A monster needs no master. Monster is master. Monster, let her believe she had control while she trained me, taught me to walk, to hunt, to appreciate the divinity of my own damnation. Monster appeared grateful to his creator and her darkness. Monster acted thankful to his creator and her inventiveness. Until one day when Monster stabbed his spikes into his creator's feet as she leaned against the wall, smiling at the completion of her own genius. Monster smiled as his guide slit her from nipple to neck and his one remaining hand reached inside her and disgorged the heart from her blood-bathed body before her face even had time to register fear. Monster left her in her darkness. In that heartless body, further father for the vermin who'd already begun to sniff her out. That was 4 years ago. I can finally admit I'm grateful to her. I've lived more in death than I ever could in life. I don't need food or drink, I don't shed or sleep. I exist every day as if it were the first. Do you understand? Can you understand me now? Now that I'm standing behind you, so close that your skin prickles with fear as I sliver my scythe around your neck. You came looking for me, didn't you? Foolishly searching the shadows for the monster you thought was me. Well, now you're truly the fool, because this monster is no myth, nor a white knight. I am the blind assassin, devoid of compassion. She removed that from me when she raided my body of blood and being. Do you hear the ticking clock? Tick-tock, tick-tock. It's inside me. It goes where I go. It counts down humanity while I continue on slaying it. I feel nothing for you people anymore. Nothing. And in a moment, you'll feel nothing too. And he was right. In an instant, blood spewed from the gash in the human's neck and splattered onto glasses that covered Monster's eyeless sockets and down onto his tongueless, grinning mouth as the clock continued ticking. Tick-tock. Tick-tock. He'd killed his creator, but couldn't extinguish the desire for revenge that she transplanted into his useless, still beating, eternally damned heart. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, men and women, nonconformers and non-believers, gender X and gender equals, Elvira, Dacula, Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger, the Blair Witch, Jigsaw, Jaws, or whoever may be out there listening from beyond, we have reached the end of another episode of Eat the Storms, the Poetry Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on Spotify, Apple, Anchor, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Public Radio, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castbox, and iTunes. My name is Damien B. Donnelly, and I was the host and producer of this show, and I would like to say a huge thank you to all of my glorious, gut-wrenching, spine-tingling guests. They were Gaynor Kane, Robert Fried Kenter, Sarah Ragg, Meryl D. Smith, Sarah Connor, Jane Doherty, Moira Donaldson, Melody Wang, Arden Hunter, Catherine Ann Cullen, Matthew Haig, Jessica Drake Thomas, and Polly Oliver. For details of all of my guests, head on over to www.eatthestorms.com, click on the podcast section, and there you will find a listing for every episode. This was the special Halloween episode. Well, that's it from moi here at Eat the Storms until we return at the end of November for Season 4. If you're a poet and would like to join the podcast, then this is a platform for everybody, regardless of you publishing 20 collections or just having a pile of papers underneath your pillow. The email for all inquiries is eatthestorms@yahoo.com. So that's it from me. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Have glorious and sweet nightmares. Have fun trick-or-treating tomorrow, bobbing for apples and scaring the bejesus out of each other. From me to you, stay safe, stay well, look out behind you, and of course, as always, stay bloody poetic!